to the Culture of Comics on the AMDG Radio Network. I am Stephen Heiner along with Jason Frazier. And this podcast is coming on Monday night. Some of you who listen to our show via podcast rather than the live stream probably went to refresh your iTunes this morning and found out that we weren't there. And we want to tell you that this is part of the fallout of Age of Ultron, is that because of the events of the Age of Ultron, we had to move this podcast, and that's all there is to it. What do you think of that theory, Jason?
There was definitely an incursion in alternate selves, and there was some crazy stuff going on yesterday. You guys wouldn't believe it. I don't believe it. It happened from time to time.
There was an Angela sighting, and we had the show had to change, and here we are. So our first Monday night broadcast, and we've got a whole ton of stuff to do today, Jason. But I think we should probably just start by addressing the fact that we've been waiting to do this show for a long time, haven't we? This particular episode.
I think, and let's be honest, there are probably some who listen to the show who are thinking, why haven't they done this show yet? I know that I've gotten some feedback, like, when are you guys going to do this? And realistically, it's because we had to kind of bide our time and get ready for this. It's a lot. We're going to be covering, as we probably can surmise by the name of the show today, we're calling this Avengers and X-Men Part 1. So that should tell you we've got a lot to cover in the next two Marvel shows. It's arguably some of the biggest books in the Marvel Universe and some of the most interesting concepts throughout. But it's just a matter of we had to prepare, and I think we did a good job. We kind of wanted to get over who's in the Avengers first, all the individual books, all the individual hero books, and then now we're getting into some of the team stuff. And I think we're going to have some good conversations about that, of course, because after all, Avengers is now one of the hottest properties going these days. And out of the 80 million books, we're going to be talking about 4 of them today, I believe. So we got a while to go. And the X-Men, something that I grew up with, I think the X-Men books are just going to be they're going to be a lot of fun. I know, Stephen, you don't read a lot of the X-Men books right now, but we're going into a very exciting time for X-Men, too, and we've come out of a very exciting time. So I guess, let me put it this way, we're in the middle of a very exciting time for X-Men.
Right, and one of the things we're going to talk about later tonight will be the minute and a half, 2 minutes that was worth the price of admission of going to see the Wolverine, but you had to wait till after the credits, or at least the first part of the credits. So we'll be getting to that, but Jason, we got a jam-packed show today, so why don't we just get started? And we're going to talk about the flagship book of the Avengers, which is Jonathan Hickman's plain old Avengers. I don't think that's in front of the title, but you got Secret Avengers and Avengers Arena and all. So I'm just going to call that plain old Avengers. It's anything but plain or old, isn't it?
It is. I'll tell you, I've already mentioned who one of my favorite writer was in the previous show, of course, Kieron Gillen. But Hickman is my second favorite, and there's a lot of reasons for that, but I will let you at least introduce the book a little bit first, and then I'll get into some of those reasons, but very excited to talk about this one.
Sure, and I think where we are right now in the teens issues of Avengers, we're being set up for the unbelievably massive event that is going to be Infinity, which maybe presaging what the crossover event is going to feel like. It's probably going to feel like Infinity after a while. But we've got, I don't know, like 3 or 4 preludes to Infinity. When you realize how this book has been set up, this current iteration of Avengers, you realize that they've been setting up for Infinity from the beginning of the book. And I suppose all of the Marvel Now titles have had that in the back of their skull, and they've been thinking about how is this going to work towards Infinity. And I think they also did a slight adjustment for Age of Ultron. So when we're looking at the plain old Avengers title, the main premise of the book is Iron Man and Captain America having a discussion about needing to be prepared for future threats. And the only way you're going to do that is by basically getting more Avengers, which, of course, is humorous considering they already have about 1 billion Avengers. So what do we need? We need another billion Avengers. So the book is structured around introducing not just people from the peripheries of the Avengers, so like, let's say, Spider-Woman, Spider-Man, et cetera, but newer, I don't think younger is the word I'm looking for, but newer, lesser-known Avengers. And this current arc has been running from the beginning of this run, where you have, what would we say, world builders, in a way. They go in to worlds and remake them in their own image, making the world more sentient and more aware. That world, as it awakes, communicates with some far distant system in order to create an event or a happening. And
right.
It's much more, and this is Jonathan Hickman. I mean, there you don't get a book like this with that those kinds of themes, this many characters, without some really big ideas happening. So just hopefully as I laid that out, you can get a sense of the fact that this is not going to be a let's fight some of the rogues gallery. Even, I mean, when I think about how big the book is, I almost feel like Thanos is kind of a minor character when faced against the arc and scope of this book. You know, it's like, oh yeah, Thanos, he's sort of a rogues gallery for the ambition of this book. So it's been an interesting ride. They use a lot of AR in this book, so there's a lot of commentary, and I've had a lot of chance to hear from the writers and the artists. And it's been an enjoyable book. It's definitely more cerebral, higher level stuff. It's not so much of the Rock'em Sock'em Avengers. If that's what you're looking for, you might get that in Arena or some other places, but it's not going on here. This is your intellectual Avengers book.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I'll tell you what, I wouldn't even say that you're going to go get your typical Avengers thing from the Arena, because as we talked about Arena, that's one that's very polarizing for a lot of fans, I think, for a very different reason. But that's not one of the things we're going to talk about today. But this is, I would say if you're looking for your day-to-day standard Avengers book, you're going to want something like Avengers Assemble, which is basically the core movie cast doing their thing. But you're right. Jonathan Hickman, genius writer. I don't know if anybody was able to read his Fantastic Four run, but just it's so amazing how he lays things out. His stories are never just one-and-done kind of arcs. They go on and on. Everything in his books happens for a reason. I think another thing that works well in the book so far, something that many fans are probably begging for, and is that they incorporated the new universe into the Avengers. You know, we've got Starbrand, and we've got, Starbrand's the only one that I can think of the top of my head. I kind of think of it, but we got Starbrand and a couple others in it. But it's a universe that's been left to the side for many, many, many years, and there's been fans kind of asking for it. I don't really know much about the new universe beforehand. But I do know that these guys are a part of it, and he's brought them back in. We now have, or we allegedly have, 18 Avengers on the core book, on the core team. And I think this next issue we get, I believe this week or the next week, actually is we're going to put more on the team. So who do we have as a core cast right now? We have the movie cast, right? We have Hulk, Captain America, Iron Man, Hawkeye, and Black Widow, and Thor, of course, excuse me.
Right.
But we've also got several of the new Avengers. We've got Wolverine, Superior Spider-Man, which is also I like how they incorporate the fact that he is a different character in the Avengers. He's still Dr. Octopus the Dick as Spider-Man in that book. We've got Captain Marvel. We've got a couple of the new mutant leftovers, so to speak. And I don't want to make that sound like a bad thing. I know fans like Cannonball and Sunspot, two characters that they are very much fans of. We've got Captain Universe, Smasher from the Guardians of the Shi'ar Imperial Guard. Goodness, we've got so many characters. It's difficult for me to even remember them all at the moment, honestly. But there's a bazillion. It is very, very intense. I would say that what happens 99% of the time here is he focuses on, you think 18 characters is too much. You'd probably be right. But what Jonathan Hickman does is he usually takes a cast of maybe five in each book and focuses on them. So it's not a matter of I'm going to have to read 18 different characters. But with that being said, I know we haven't got too much into what we think of the books, but with that being said, I think that sometimes that is a detriment to the book, having so many characters, because you lose out on a lot of the character moments. This book is not about character moments. It's all in service to the bigger story. And it's quite a story, I'll tell you that. Jonathan Hickman knows what he's doing. I'm a big fan ever since I read just Secret Warriors and Fantastic Four, both fantastic books by him in the past. And so when I heard he was doing this, I was pretty excited. And I got to say, I'm not any less excited now, but I have come to realize that you're not going to get a lot of your, as I said, your character moments from this book. It's going to be a lot of overarching, very cerebral, very cosmic, as a matter of fact, very cosmic stories. A lot of the stories have happened in space or with things from space. So you can see the direction he's going in as we get further and further into the book here. He's definitely bringing us up into infinity. I think they've really upped the game, though, with Thanos, because I didn't think he needed that many people to take him on, quite honestly. It's pretty impressive so far. But so far, I like it. It's not your typical Avengers book. It's probably going to fool a few people who are going to look for that their Avengers fix after watching the movie for the millionth time. This is not the book for you. This is probably a book you probably should have started from the beginning, right? Don't you think?
Yeah, I don't know how you jump on in this book. I don't.
And I don't think it's a bad thing. I think this book is catered to the people who read from the beginning. I think maybe after we finish Infinity, which is probably November, then we may have a jumping on point again, but it's hard to say.
Do you think we'll be done with Infinity by November?
I think so. I don't know. It's we're doing one, maybe two a month. I was looking through the solicits, and I think we're in three or four by October out of six.
Okay.
So we might.
Felt like the clue was in the name. It was going to go on for a while.
When I was going through and adding my polls for Infinity, I got to tell you, I was just like, oh God, just more and more and more books. Why are they all tying in? I want to read them all. It's just too much.
Well, I was going to say, it's par for the course for you, Jason. I mean, you pull almost the entire universe. So, I mean, what were you adding, like three or four more books? Or?
Well, I'm adding three or four more. They're adding a new Avengers book out of this, another one, Stephen. They're adding Mighty Avengers.
Is it Mighty Avengers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, so they're adding a brand new one again. So we got to start. This actually looks like a pretty cool team, though. A lot of, I hate to use the word minority because that doesn't make sense. And there's lots of different characters throughout the universe, but it seems like this character, they're using Luke Cage, Photon, Blue Marvel. So several of those characters, and I think that when I was reading an interview, that's kind of what they based it on, which seems bizarre to me because I subscribed to the Marvel Unlimited application, which you can go through and read all those old ones. You stream them and read them. And there was an arc back in the 90s for Avengers that had to deal with minority Avengers, and there was a big complex. It's like, this just doesn't feel right for Avengers. They've always had minority members, always. It seems weird that they make it a point now. But it's gonna be interesting because they're adding a lot. We're even getting another Avengers book out of the deal here, it seems like. But
can we address that a bit?
Yeah, I think so.
Is there such a thing as too many Avengers books?
That's a good question. That's a difficult question to answer, though. It seems like I would say normally, yes, that'd be too many Avengers books. But I can tell you, I read all of the Avengers books, and I like every one of them. They all bring something different to the table. And as long as they keep going down that path, I can see that being a viable marketing option, just keeping them all going. Now, if they all begin to tie into this big story and et cetera, they all become somewhat of a scale. Then it's very different. I don't think that we need five of the same kind of books, but they all bring something different. So right now, I don't think it's too many. It just depends on what your preferences are. They all have very different takes on the Avengers, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's premised on our very first book here, that, you know, the Avengers, the plain old vanilla Avengers book is anything but plain old or vanilla, but it's the one with no additional title. It's not Mighty Avengers, Secret Avengers, Avengers Assemble. It's just Avengers. It's the core book. And the sort of key to each, at the beginning of each Avengers book, it'll say, you know, what happened last time in Avengers, and then on the next page, it'll have a light, you know, the equivalent of a lit name for each character that's appearing in that issue. So it's a little bit of a guide, but it is a lot to keep up with. And as we said earlier, it may not be a great book to just try to jump in on. You might have to go back and get the trade if it's out and start from the beginning. I don't think there's a convenient way. And it's weird because I don't usually find myself saying that. I feel like with most books, you can get to know. Like, I was just thinking about that today as I was reading Indestructible Hulk, in which Daredevil appears. And they devote 3 or 4 pages to kind of telling someone who's an Indestructible Hulk reader who's maybe never heard of Daredevil. Those 3 or 4 pages are spent basically telling you about Daredevil. And that's a great – you could jump on to Indestructible Hulk there and follow this new arc. I don't think there's a way to do that with this Avengers book. I don't think that's a detriment. I think that speaks to how broad, wide, and interesting Jonathan Hickman's universe and imagination is, and that you really have to go back and I guess this is one of those books that you read more slowly, right, Jason? I mean, sometimes we establish a certain comic reading speed, and this is one of those books that maybe defies that regular reading speed. You really got to take your time with it.
I would agree. I think this one requires a lot of attention. I mean, you don't sit down and read this while you're watching a TV show, I don't think, because you're going to miss something. And like most Jonathan Hickman books, everything, like I said earlier, everything happens for a reason. So there's nothing that really happens that's not going to come back into play later, you know? And again, that's just one of Hickman's trademarks overall. And I just love his writing. But again, I don't think – it's interesting to think now that this Avengers comic book is not catering – to a younger audience, at least not a younger audience who's going to understand it as well. It's catering to more to the adult audience who are going to grasp the concepts and run with them. But it's been a great story so far. It really has been mostly building up, though. We're meeting new villains and new heroes as we go. I think it would be very difficult, but I think that you would get some enjoyment out of it if you take it back and go look at the first. I think the trade paperback has the first 3 or 4 issues, maybe the first 5 in it, and probably the first 5, that makes sense. But they're good. They're very good issues, and it's a good book. But it's not going to have your little character moments. It's going to be big and sweeping. It's like an event book already by itself, isn't it, really, when you think about it? It kind of is,
yep,
like a big event.
It's its own crossover event.
It's a constant crossover. It's been going on for a year, so it's gone on long enough already. But I would be interested to see, because really, when you think about it, everything is leading up to Infinity. I'd like to see what he has planned next. That'd be what I really want to jump onto after this. I like the book so far, but it's all in service to this story that they've been leading to. So let's see where they go next with it.
Absolutely. Well, without further ado, we've got to continue down our Avengers line. And Jason, you're going to tell us about the next one.
That would be Secret Avengers, I believe, good sir.
Yes.
Secret Avengers. Secret Avengers is a very, very cool book. I was not prepared. I read the initial run of Secret Avengers back when it was Captain America or Commander Rogers or whatever you want to call him leading the team, and he was doing that as a kind of a Black Ops Avengers group. So, but I think that been more successful since Marvel Now launched, because it really is a Black Ops Avengers game. It's led by Nick Fury, Maria Hill, and, of course, everybody's favorite, Phil Coulson, is leading the team now. So very, very cool. But these guys really lead the pack. And then after that, they have other members of Avengers who they bring in as they need them. And so they bring in Black Ops. So far they've used Mockingbird, Taskmaster, Hulk, War Machine, and they've used them – and Black Widow, actually, now that I think about it, and they go through and they use them, and then they wipe their memory. So the Avengers who they use on these teams don't actually know that they were on this team or part of this mission. And so far, it really does leads into a very solid Black Ops kind of feel. I'm really enjoying it so far. I think it's interesting because it's a lot of political action, I would say, having to do with AIM, the Advanced Idea Mechanics Group, which many of you probably remember from the Iron Man 3 movie, if you're not a normal comic reader. So, but they've actually incorporated the Iron Patriot armor onto War Machine now, so they're bringing it all online. But they have recently assassinated a UN delegate unintentionally, so now they're in deep trouble. Now they're going to have to deal with all of that. But it is very, very cool. As I believe that initially Nick Spencer was writing that, so I don't know if he still is. I think he might have switched off by now. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. Is this one you read already, Stephen? Do you know if Nick Spencer is the one writing this?
I do not read Secret Avengers, unfortunately, no.
No, I understand. It's cool. But they really are dealing essentially at this point with, I believe it is Nick Spencer still. And I think Luke Ross is doing the art. Luke Ross does some very, very cool work. It's kind of gritty, which makes sense for the kind of content we're dealing with here. As a matter of fact, the first issue deals with Hawkeye going on a mission and being shot and being tortured. And turns out Nick Fury shot him. I'll spoil that first issue a little bit now. with a healing bullet. So it's a bullet that he was going to heal from eventually anyway. So they introduced some very unique concepts throughout, I think. And it's worked very well so far. Right now, as I said, they're dealing with the fallout of a UN ambassador being shot. The UN ambassador, however, is the scientist supreme of AIM, and he is the leader of a nation, I believe it's called Begalia, something like that, which is actually a island nation for supervillains. So, and every person who lives on that island is granted honorary status in the Masters of Evil. And, man, they have a whole cabinet set up as, like, the Secretary of State is the second Black Widow, the evil one, and they've got, like, who do they have? Graviton. Okay, you get some very cool villains as, like, the cabinet of this nation. And so there's a big happening getting ready to happen here with this political incident they've got now, because they've got some powerhouses leading this nation who are also villains, just straight up villains. Of course, if you like Coulson from the movie, you'll like him in the book. They introduced him into the comic books because of the movies, so he still has the very same kind of attitude and voice. The Nick Fury they have in this book is the Nick Fury from the movies, kind of. That's a long story, by the way, but he's in there as well, leading the pack. And again, it's just, if you're looking for a little bit more of a political action kind of book, this one would be the book you're looking for there. Very, very cool so far. And what I like about it is it does have a rotating membership based on the mission needs. And they use that, the memory wipes to make sure that even if they did the mission, they don't remember it. And furthermore, they're all in it for something. The SHIELD is able to offer everybody who works for them in a mission something they want. Now, we don't know what that is yet. We don't know what it is everybody's asked for. I'm sure that will come up in a story later on. But I like what Nick Spencer is doing. This one actually, to me, and not – again, Jonathan Hickman was one of my favorite writers, but this one is more exciting for me to read when I pick it up. I'm more excited to read this one than the other Avengers, just because I'm interested. I want to see where it's going next with this one as well. It's just a good story so far.
What would you say that this is? I know we had talked about Winter Soldier a couple shows back, and we talked about the sort of person who's going to read Winter Soldier. And now that Winter Soldier's not happening, is this a natural place for people who are abandoned that, you know, we're reading Winter Soldier, or is it significantly different?
Well, it's the same and different. I'd say that when you say that if it's a spiritual successor to that, I would say that it probably is. It's got the same kind of feel to it. The art is very similar, actually a little cleaner than it was in Winter Soldier, but the same kind of gritty kind of feel to it all. And storyline-wise, you still have a lot of politics and assassinations and cool stuff like that happening. Cool assassinations, but cool stuff happening in the book that are leading into that.
Cool, yeah, cool stuff like assassinations. That might be our quote for the week there.
Murder! But it is very similar to Winter Soldier. I would say Winter Soldier probably dug a little deeper into the Jason Bourne kind of feel, but this one has more of, I would say this one sometimes has more of a Mission Impossible feel to it. So,
okay,
kind of the same thing. So I would think if you're looking for something to kind of fill in your Winter Soldier thing in the interim, I believe they're bringing Winter Soldier back, by the way, in some capacity next year. But if you're looking for something between that and now, this would probably be the book for you. It has a little bit bigger cast, obviously, but it still has the same kind of feel to it. You're going to get a little bit more superpower kind of stuff. Winter Soldier was fairly non-powered as you go through it. But with if you have the Hulk in a book, it's a whole different level. But I would say it's a very good successor to Winter Soldier overall. I would say it's not what it was intended for, but that's probably what a good follow-up book for you if you kind of have a hole in your life, so to speak, now that Winter Soldier's gone.
Okay. Is there, I know you had mentioned that the cast rotates a bit. Is there one sort of leading character among the cast?
The leading character, quite honestly, are the three S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. You've got Coulson, Fury, and Hill. So, yeah, I mean, you have them, but it's interesting that they chose them to be the lead characters. The other ones are just kind of, they use the other Avengers basically as tools to get what they want done. So, really,
okay.
It's what it is. I mean, they don't even remember doing what they did when they've done it. I don't know. Let me try to put that back into a coherent thought. They don't know that they did the mission after they did it. There we go. That's something like that. So, but it's cool. It's very cool. I like I said, this one, for me, it gets a little more exciting, and not in a bad way, because, again, I do want to state again, I really love what Jonathan Hickman's doing, but it's a big story. So you're just reading a chapter of a story, and this one does have a little bit separate arcs going on. So a little bit easier to keep fresh and exciting with. And I know, I believe the Avengers is now in like issue 14 or something like that, and it's all been kind of one big story at this point. Secret Avengers,
right.
Not so much.
Well, there it is. If Avengers is the big cerebral, big idea book, this is the secret, fun assassination book. That is a corollary or at least a sister book to the now defunct Winter Soldier, which I suppose will be resurrected just in time for the new Captain America movie. I'm sure that'll be a coincidence, though.
Probably not. I think he's part of. The Marvel Now Wave 2 they're going to be doing again in January.
Right, that's true.
So, but again, I'm sure that's because the movie's coming out. I think you're right. They wanted to start fresh there and kind of let him rest for a few months before they bring him back in. I'm surprised they haven't used him in the Secret Avengers team yet, quite honestly. It kind of makes perfect sense. But what do I know? I'm just a fan.
Well, that gets us into our next Avengers book, which is a borderline Avengers book because it's the Uncanny Avengers. And
wah, wah.
Jason, what is Uncanny normally associated with? Is that normally associated with Avengers?
That would be associated with the X-Men. And this book, I just want to state, was supposed to be the flagship Marvel Now book, and that was because it was coming out of the big event from last year, which we all remember was the Avengers versus X-Men. And this is kind of the Unity team. I think it's even what they call them, the Unity team. This is like, well, you know, we fought each other. Let's be on a team together and be cool, whatever.
Right. Well, would you call it the Avengers Unity team or the X-Men Unity team?
I don't know. I think, and that's actually part of the story, right? What's happening now in the book is that they're not really working. They're kind of like, we're better. No, we're better. So it's. I think that plays into the story. That's part of the big appeal to this is that they're trying to figure out and merge the worlds of the X-Men and the Avengers, and the characters aren't necessarily having that yet. Very different viewpoints so far.
So are we going to try to solve that problem today, Jason? X-Men or Avengers? Where do you line up?
I think I fall right on the Unity team as the guy who likes them both now. Now, a few years ago, I would have said X-Men, but I've really become, under Brian Michael Bendis, I really liked his Avengers, even though they kind of have some weird talking head kind of books sometimes. I liked what he was doing, I liked the story, and that brought me back into the Avengers fold. But I am such a huge fan of the X-Men since I was a little kid. That's what brought me into comic books pretty majorly in the 90s. And they've had some amazing stories when really everything else in the Marvel Universe is kind of languishing. The X-Men have been going pretty strong for a few years now, ever since the Messiah trilogy. I think they've had pretty good stuff going on. So I think I fall in the middle now, but if you'd asked me a year ago, I would have said X-Men.
Because I remember when we were talking about AVX, you had said that you felt Scott Summers was right, which led me to believe that Jason's going to say X-Men on this one, but you're on the Unity team is what you're saying.
I am, but I still say Cyclops is right. I have a T-shirt that says it. Believe me, I still think if I had to pick, for example, a number two favorite character, we all know my number one from last episode, but my second favorite character is Cyclops. He's been very well developed the last few years. If you'd ask me, if you'd ask my 13-year-old self, are you ever going to like Cyclops? I'd be like, no, he's such a weenie. But my 31, 32-year-old self, Cyclops is a badass. So that's where I stand now. Unfortunately, Cyclops is not on the Unity team. He's on a separate group now. He's kind of a renegade. But who is on this team, Steven?
Uncanny X-Men. Well, I think I may have told you this when we first started talking before we ever were on our first show, that I tend to refer to all new X-Men as the Jean Grey book. And
exactly.
As the main reason that I read that book is because I love anything that has – if Jean Grey was painted on some cardboard and they were selling those for $4 a week, I'd stop by and get those. I'm just a sucker. So if I think of that as the Jean Grey book – and this is, I'm going to tilt here quite a bit. I like to think of this as a Scarlet Witch book. even though Scarlet Witch is not a major character, it's a character that I'm obsessed with in the same way I'm obsessed with Jean Grey for any number of reasons. But it's not really fair to call it the Scarlet Witch book. But on the Unity team, we have Cap, of course. We have Havoc, Alex Summers. You could say the also ran to Scott Summers. Is that fair?
That's completely fair. Completely fair.
You know, it's sort of like how do you stand next to Scott Summers and be, even though you're the older brother, and not feel like kind of a chump a little bit. I don't think there's any way to do that. And it's weird because Cap is trying to give Havoc power, but he's like, the only reason Havoc has any power is because Cap says he does. So
yeah.
that's been fun. So Cap, Havoc, our favorite short clawed character who we'll be talking about a little later, Wolverine, is on the team. Thor, as I said, Scarlet Witch, and Rogue, and we have some other people who are there. Let's see, Sunfire, Wasp, Wonder Man.
Mm-hmm.
Those are our three, but our original six that are part of this team: Cap, Havoc, Rogue, Scarlet Witch, Thor, and Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of this book?
Now, I think to talk about this book, we have to preface it a little bit, because this book is the product of two different stories. This book is the product of, first and foremost, Avengers versus X-Men. It's essentially the world is coming out of this giant battle with the Phoenix and the Avengers and X-Men tearing the world apart. And this is them trying to bring mutants' relations back into line with the state of superhero. I've never understood, by the way, I'm going to go off on a tangent for a second, why everybody hates mutants so much when someone who got bombed by a gamma bomb has the same kind of power. Why is he any less scary than someone who's born with it? I don't understand it. I think it's the weirdest thing ever. Why do they hate mutants and love Iron Man or Captain America? They're arguably just as dangerous. But again, that's the Marvel Universe for you. That's where we're at. So it's a product of the Avengers versus X-Men and trying to bring the world together and say, hey, we can work together on mutants, so can you. Love the mutants. But also, it's a product of Rick Remender's previous work on Uncanny X-Force, right?
Right.
There's a lot of threads that come out into this book from that book. So if you were a fan and you're not reading, if you were a fan of Uncanny X-Force under Remender and you're not reading this, you're doing yourself a disservice, because this book brings in a lot of story elements that just got kind of started and left. And so this is if the Secret Avengers is the spiritual successor to Winter Soldier in some respect, this is a direct sequel to Uncanny X-Force. It brings a lot of interesting elements in, but I do want to say one thing about the very first issue. It probably had one of the most shocking last pages I've seen in a long time, just because of the sheer gore factor of it, the unexpectedness of it. Do you remember the last page of the first issue?
I do. How could I forget it?
Yeah. For those who don't know, the Avengers vs. X-Men storyline ended with Cyclops being taken over by the Phoenix, losing control like Jean Grey did, and killing Professor Xavier again. So he's dead again. But I think he's dead for a while this time, because Uncanny Avengers number one ends with the Red Skull, Captain America's super Nazi evil bad guy, pulling the brain out of Charles Xavier in gory detail and having it inserted into his own. So now he's decided he likes the minorities. He likes Jewish people. He likes all the minorities. He just hates mutants now. What a weird turnaround, by the way. I'm not sure I get where they're going with that one. But, I'm okay with everybody else. Just talk about mutants. They're evil. But now I would think – I don't get it because I feel like he's kind of a mutant now. He took a mutant's brain, put it into his head. He's like a quarter mutant on his uncle's side or something, I think. So it's an interesting take on the Red Skull, but like I said, you can count on Rick Remender to do some very hardcore violence, and he's going to kill some characters, and I bet we're going to see some deaths in the upcoming months, as a matter of fact, because we're into a very interesting storyline now that still is dealing with the Seed of Apocalypse, which is one of the storylines, one of his amazing storylines, the Dark Angel Saga and Uncanny X-Force. So very, very interesting, but
yeah, I mean, we've already had some. I mean, Rogue accidentally killing people. I mean,
nice.
You've got and I remember reading the letters page at the back of some of the early Uncanny Avengers, and a lot of people were very offended at the level of brutality. So can we call this, if we are calling Avengers the regular flagship Avengers book, the Cerebral book, and Secret Avengers is the Jason Bourne book, that Uncanny is the rated R, no holds barred, very gritty book, maybe?
Yeah, I would say it's also got some very interesting, I wouldn't call them quite as high concept as Hickman's books, but very high concept thoughts, storylines that have been building for many years now, and just ultra-violence. Ultra-violence and infighting, right? Because right now the team isn't getting along anyway with each other. And the ultra-violence, I mean, just the I keep calling it ultra-violence. I'm going to trademark that one for this book. It is ultra-violent. When it gets ugly, it really gets ugly.
Right.
I remember where Thor smashes in Wolverine's head with a hammer, and he's just he's kind of a drooling.
Yeah, he's out for the count.
A while. Yeah, it's interesting because we also I'm really a big fan of where he's going because we now have the four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, and they're all characters who have recently died. Most of them have recently died. Banshee's been dead for a while, but some of the characters are bringing back. I'm excited to see where they go. The Sentry, man, that guy was. He was the big bad guy behind the Siege storyline. He's just too powerful. And the Ken, the son of Wolverine, back as one of the Horsemen of Apocalypse. So there's some good story elements coming on. I am not a fan of Scarlet Witch in this book. I kind of already have a mad on for her anyway because of what she did with the House of M storyline when she canceled out all the mutants. And now she just gets to come back. And everyone – I knew I was going to do this tonight, Steven, because we're talking about – first, we were talking about a lot of stuff that's going to hinge on Avengers versus X-Men. She arguably killed hundreds, if not thousands, of people and took away everybody's powers except for about 200 mutants. And she's back on the Avengers, and everybody forgives her. But Cyclops
okay.
gets taken over by the
true.
But Cyclops gets taken over by the Phoenix Force, which we all know, or everybody already forgives Jean Grey, but she wiped out a galaxy. When she was Dark Phoenix, a galaxy, and they're okay with her, but Cyclops goes crazy and kills one man, all the while curing the world of all of its problems, and now he's the biggest bad guy in the Marvel Universe. I don't get it. What's the correlation here?
You know, this is surprising, especially Jason, who's married to such a beautiful woman, doesn't get that Scarlet Witch and Jean Grey have something that Scott Summers does not have, and that is that they're beautiful. And so,
or they don't have something that he has.
I was going to say, as in real life, Jason, as in comics, women get away with, how shall we say this, murder? And so it's easy to forgive Scarlet Witch and Jean Grey because they're hot, I guess.
I can see that. I know my wife gets out of enough speeding tickets, and I never get out of any. I don't understand that either. But, it just drives me crazy. It just drives me crazy that everyone's so – and then some of the dialogue you get from the Scarlet Witch where she's so anti-mutant, considering she is a mutant, it's infuriating sometimes. And I've read some message boards here and there and stuff as I go throughout my work day. Don't tell anybody. As we go throughout the day. And I just see fans kind of feeling the same way. I see apologists saying, you know what, it's Scarlet Witch, she didn't do anything wrong. And then I see people who are just raging, and I'm on that side. I'm like, I don't understand. I don't get the dichotomy here, the hypocrisy. That's a better term for it. There's a lot of hypocrisy with Scarlet Witch currently, And that's it. But you know what? That makes a good book, right? That's what's making some of this stuff so interesting, is that the team is fighting so much. Rogue is very much against Scarlet Witch, antagonizing her at every turn. But on the other side of things, it's very interesting to see a little bit of a Rogue and Thor flirtation happening. That'd be an interesting combination, I think. I'm going to call that one of the relationship down the line. They're going to get together at some point. And so, but right now, where we're at in the books, we're at right now, the team is split up, right? They're not together. They have the group's okay with killing people, and the group that's not split up and doing their own thing at the moment. So, very cool. And also, we have what do you want to call him? A Gandhi Wonder Man who doesn't want to do any fighting. He's like, I'm on the team, but I'm not going to fight. Cool. And we're like, yeah, that's fine. What are you talking about? How can you be on the Avengers and not fight? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't. But I suppose they're trying to represent maybe this is the United Nations of mutant-dom and Avenger-dom, and so you have to represent all views, even the pacifist view, which I suppose is really interesting in its own way.
It could be. I'm complaining a lot about this, but I want to make it very clear I like the book. The fact that I get so bothered by some of the concepts should tell you how interesting the book is. The fact that we can argue about a concept like that it makes it a good story, I think.
Yeah, and I think right now I'm struggling a bit to I need to answer the question that I posed to you, which is, you know, is this am I an Avengers person or an X-Men person? But I also have to figure out, do I like this book because it's an Avengers book or because it's an X-Men book? And I think that's the problem with the X-Men narrative, and I feel like it might be a bit played out now. I think that when X-Men, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more when we get to Uncanny and X-Men, which should really be called X-Women, when we get to those books, but the idea of the race of people who are discriminated against because they're different from us, I think is a bit heavy-handed now. And I don't know whether that's because we've moved forward as a society or we've just moved forward in comic books, that it's not entirely the Magneto Charles Xavier fight. Is it really relevant anymore? You know, we can live in peace, or, you know, humans must be destroyed. I think we've moved beyond that, and I hope that this book is the troublesome stew that comes forth when you mix those two answers. We can live in peace and the humans must be exterminated, and you have Uncanny Avengers. So as Jason was describing, you got a lot of conflict, difficulty, and even within the characters. I mean, you talk about Scarlet Witch. I mean, what are you going to do when you're the daughter of Magneto? I mean, I'm sorry, you're not set up to be a model kid. That's for sure. You're definitely in a strange place when that happens. So
I would agree.
I have to say, I'm going to abstain on Avengers versus X-Men on a side. And let me explain why. I don't like the Avengers as voiced by Captain America that, you know, we're basically the government and we're here to help. Because for me, the Avengers are intimately tied up with S.H.I.E.L.D., the U.S. government, and the establishment. And I'm very concerned about the all-powerful establishment that wields their secret, you know, security force or not-so-secret security force. And we see this in the Ultimate Universe as well, although the commentary is a bit more raw there about, you know, what the political, you know, establishment really wants from the Ultimates. But so I'm not on the side of the Avengers that we're always right and we're always good and we're here to help. I love the heroic side of it. I don't like the self-righteousness that comes from Steve Rogers when he's being the head of the Avengers. I think Cap is great as Cap, but when he assumes the role of leader of the Avengers, we can't help but always feel that, well, whatever side the Avengers are on, that's the right side, and everyone else is on the wrong side, and that rubs me the wrong way. On the X-Men side, there's not a unified X-Men stance. You even have within the X-Men, you have different schools, and then different approaches. So I think, and obviously Scarlet Witch's, you know, wiping out of a large number of mutants didn't help either. And I don't like the narrative of a minority of people at this point in the Marvel Universe, a minority of mutants. Even with the rebirth of mutants, they're still a minority, that they, you know, are anointed as the guardians of everyone else. I think we've got to find a way to live together in peace, and that onus is on the Avengers just as much as it is on the X-Men. And I think if this book will achieve anything and lasting relevance to us as sort of commentary on the zeitgeist, is that for us to live together, we're going to have to look beyond our own agendas. That if we're going to live together, we're going to have to take other people's agendas as our own. And that is probably what we're seeing in the book right now, why it's so difficult for them to get along, because you've been fighting against these people, you know, mostly your whole life, and now you want to be on a team. And all your points about Scarlet Witch are well taken. So I think that's where we are with that.
I think you've got a very good point about that. It's almost like an imperialist view from the Avengers, right? Like, they come in and say, we're going to help you, but we're going to make you let us help you. It's not a matter of...
You will convert to democracy, or we'll shoot you.
Right, right. That's a very, very good... And you know what's so interesting from Captain America's perspective, that he had a very different viewpoint in many, many years ago in a Civil War storyline. It's like we're looking at two different versions of the same character.
Right.
He didn't want the government to do all this then, but now he's all about it. And I think it just depends on the writer. I think the character has to be what he has to be for the story, right? But it's very unsettling, you're right. It's very much why during that whole storyline I was on the X-Men side, because it just didn't sit right with me for someone to come into my backyard and say, here, we're going to take your daughter because she might be a problem. Cool?
Right.
No, not cool. But anyway, I know we can go on about this forever, so I'll let it go for now. For now, I'll let it go.
All right, so I think that takes us to the end of, you could say, the Avengers books, and puts us into our first, strictly speaking, X-Men book. And again, Jason, I'll let you take this away. I made sure that I read Uncanny X-Men number one in preparation for today's show, and I just thought, oh, I'll just knock it out. And I got to the end, I'm like, well, I need to buy number two. And I bought number two, and I think I ordered the trade. So I will be getting caught up, but I really, really enjoyed the reveal at the end of number one. And again, as a non-Scott Summers, how can I say this? I'm not an advocate for Scott Summers, therefore that wasn't the draw to the book. I just wanted to fill in the rest of the Marvel Now universe, especially regards to the X-Men. I don't pull that many X-Men books, so I thought, well, I should probably read number one just so I – same thing with X-Men number one. I pulled the number one just so I thought, I probably need to get to know this a bit. And I was pleasantly surprised. I really liked it, and it pulled me in to read at least a couple more. So I'm going to be reading the trade, and we'll see what happens after that.
Well, I think we're talking, of course, about Uncanny X-Men. Now, as you said, many years ago, I shouldn't say many years ago, 2 years ago, the X-Men were all unified and living on an island in San Francisco together, all one part. And then they had their schism, and as a result, Wolverine and Cyclops split up. They broke up. It was such a sad breakup. I thought they were going to be together forever. But they broke up, and they went their separate ways and split the X-Men down the middle. And Cyclops, he's had a more military kind of approach. But in my opinion, it's a necessary approach, because really at that point there was only 200 of them left, or even less than that. And he says, I want to make sure everybody understands how to protect themselves, because the world hates you. They're going to try to kill you. He wasn't making an army. He wasn't trying to take over the world. He was making sure the people were taken care of and protected and trained. And I appreciate that more than, hey, let's just go put him back into the school that's been blown up 50 million times. You know, I would understand his side more. But anyway, Uncanny X-Men, the new version, Volume 3, I believe. Yeah, Volume 3, is about Cyclops' side after Avengers vs. X-Men. Cyclops is a fugitive from the law, again, because he killed one guy and solved many of the world's problems. He's a super evil dude. And so he is now out there in the world with Emma Frost and Magneto and Magic, who are all very, very cool characters, by the way. And he's building a new school for himself that he thinks is better developed for the world they live in. And he's just trying to make sure that the mutants are trained. I think his school is more like Charles Xavier's original school was. And the new Jean Grey school, Wolverine school, is a little nutty, a little different. Cyclops is trying to build a school, train mutants, protect mutants. And I think in the first issue, no, actually it was an all-new X-Men. Some very cool lines, but in which he talks about, I'm here, if you're a mutant, I'm here to help you, I'll find you, I'll protect you. I think that's a better message for those who are, it's just a scary thing for New Mutants, I imagine, to come out. And all of a sudden, and again, this is all for the sake of the story, I know, Steven, but all of a sudden, mutants are very, very much, very hated again. They, for a while there, they were okay. Nobody really, it wasn't as though it was the end of the world like it is now. Everybody, there's hate crimes again. Things that haven't been in the X-Men universe for, at least to this extent, for several years. So he's out there gathering them and bringing them back together and training them and letting them go to school and learn how to develop themselves. But in the midst of all this, he's being hunted by the government, by S.H.I.E.L.D. particularly. And so we've got the uncanny Avengers on his trail. And of course, his brother's hunting him down. He's also got if you read the first issue, I don't know how much you want to spoil about this. We are on like issue 10 or something now, so hopefully you're reading enough.
Yeah, I think we've got to assume our readers can't expect us to hold back from a book that's so far developed at this point.
Right. So we find out that there is a traitor in the X-Men at the end of that book, and it's none other than Magneto.
Huge
surprise. Surprise. Yeah.
I just fell out of my chair.
Yeah. Well, get back up, because guess what? He's a double agent. He's not a traitor per se. He's working. He says he's gathering information from S.H.I.E.L.D. to use with Cyclops. Once again, something that Cyclops used Cyclops many years ago or a couple years ago. Fans used to really, people who didn't like Cyclops really get mad because it seemed like he always had a plan. He was like, even if things went bad, he's like, I planned for this. It's okay. In this case, he didn't plan on Magneto doing that. So he's kind of, him and Magneto are not, I think there's going to be a little bit of a fight for leadership amongst this new school because Magneto is now somewhat undermining Cyclops when he gets a chance. And to top all that off, after Avengers versus X-Men, the people who were the closest to the Phoenix or the people who were infected by the Phoenix, some of their powers are now broken. So now Cyclops, Emma Frost, Magneto, Magic, and I think Colossus
Namor
as well. Yeah, their powers are not working like they used to work. They're either magnified or lessened or just gone altogether. So now not only are they trying to train themselves and train their students, they're also trying to retrain themselves on how their powers are working again because they are just completely bizarre and different. I know that Magneto's weaker than he was. Cyclops' optic blasts are way more uncontrollable than they were before and just powerful. Emma Frost lost her telepathy. Now she's just a diamond chick. And Magic, of course, is hers is a little more complex. I don't know how far you've read, Steven, but her power is essentially she's draining her power from the limbo dimension. So they're dealing with a whole set of problems. The world hates them again. They're trying to save the young ones. They're fighting amongst themselves. But overall, I was when Brian Michael Bendis was announced as a writer for the X-Men, I was not terribly excited. And that's not because he's not a good writer, just because, as I said, sometimes in the Avengers he would get into a little bit of a talking head syndrome. There would be issues where it was just all conversation. And in the X-Men, that could be a problem because the X-Men as a whole, the X-Men books have always been more continuity heavy than the Avengers books. But I must say, Brian Michael Bendis surprised the holy hell out of me. His X-Men books make it better than it's been in years, and it's been good. It's been good, so it's better. And I really like where he's going with it. I'm interested to see how they resolve their broken powers when they get the school activated and set up. I know they're gathering some very weird powers in students right now, and I'm looking forward to this. And, of course, before we get too far in all the X-Men books, it should be mentioned that next month begins the X-Men's 50th anniversary storyline event, which is going to be called Battle of the Atom, which is going to have – it's going to tie pretty heavily into the all-new X-Men story hook, which we'll talk about in a moment. It's a pretty big hook, by the way. But it's going to be – and so I expect we're going to be seeing some very different landscapes for the mutants and the X-Men in general after that storyline is wrapped up. I'm very excited to see where that goes. But the book itself, I'm a big fan of Uncanny X-Men. It's probably my favorite X-Men book at the moment. Again, because it stars my boy Cyclops, but also because it's very well written. It's got your hot chick factor, if that's what you're looking for, with Emma Frost and, of course, the triplets. So
right.
The, what do they call them? The cuckoos. So it's got lots of attractive ladies.
What are you saying, Jason? That I'm interested in comic books because of good looking women? I represent
not just
that comment.
I resent that comment. It's okay if you are. There's nothing wrong with that, and because I think everybody is to an extent. So it's okay. But this book's got it all for me. It's got a great voice. What the writer's got, the art sometimes is hit and miss for me, and I don't know if you agree with me on this one or not. But Chris Boccolo, I think that's how you say it. Again, I'm not very good with names, and I apologize. I'm trying to get better. Chris Boccolo or Boccolo. His stuff gets a little hard to tell what's happening sometimes with his art. It's so I don't know how to describe it. It's just not very very clean for me in a lot of ways. But it is a good book. I can even through the art, I can work through that because I don't hate the art. It's just something is difficult to tell what's happening. But I like it. I mean, I know you just started reading it, but as you said, it kind of hooks you in. Do you think you're going to be reading this one going forward, or is it something you're just kind of going to wait and see?
I ordered the trade, so I'm gonna. I think that gets me through about four or five issues, and I think I'll see where I go from there. And I think that's where I'm trying to feel this out a bit more. Jason, I know the Avengers universe a little bit better as far as, let's say, the universe of books, and I'm kind of trying to feel my way through X-Men. So if we, you know, as we were doing with Avengers, I was trying to categorize what kind of Avengers book this is. Uncanny is, fair to say, the flagship book of the X-Men line, correct?
That's a difficult question as well. I know I'm going off a lot of tangents tonight, and I apologize. This is a very emotional show for me. No, I'm just kidding. But I have a lot of opinions about all of this. But I think the Uncanny X-Men, it could be the flagship if you're a fan of Cyclops, or any of the characters that I mentioned. But it depends on which side of the schism you fell on. If you were a big fan of Wolverine, probably not going to like this book too much because it has little to no Wolverine at all. I don't think he's even appeared in the book yet. Maybe once. When he visited the school. So it's very different. I mean, if I had to classify this, it'd be difficult. I would say it's the Cyclops side of the universe. It's the Cyclops side. And the Wolverine side is the Wolverine and the X-Men side is the Wolverine side of things. I think All New X-Men is the in-between book. So I think you have to make a choice of which characters you like more, which side of this schism you can appreciate. Cyclops, who wants to protect and develop his mutants, or Wolverine, who says kids shouldn't fight, so I'm just going to teach him and train him to fight. By the way, again, hypocrisy is everywhere there. They shouldn't fight, but I'm going to train them how to do it. That's cool. I guess I don't see why there's a schism anymore, quite honestly, because the school is basically they're doing the same thing. I don't understand why. Maybe it's just because he killed Xavier, but it seems – so I'd say this one isn't quite like – you couldn't say this one is like a flagship or anything like that. It just depends on who you like more as a character and which side. I would say this one deals more with trying to build a school. Wolverine's gotten a little more crazy. His stuff is a little goofier now on that side. A little more comedy in that. This one's a little more serious. But I would say Uncanny X-Men's the Cyclops side, Wolverine and the X-Men's the Wolverine side, and All New X-Men's in between all both of those.
Okay, that's fair enough. Well, we're plotting ahead here. For those of you who are just joining us, which you're probably not because the overwhelming majority of our listeners listen to the podcast, but just to remind you, if you've been in a stream of Marvel, Avengers, and X-Men goodness, you are listening to The Culture of Comics on the AMDG Radio Network. We are talking Avengers and X-Men today, and this is part one of at least probably three parts to get through all of these books. So far, we've talked about Avengers, Secret Avengers, Uncanny Avengers, and now we are talking about Uncanny X-Men. Anything else that we want to say before moving on to the inappropriately named Simply X-Men book?
No, I think basically this book, I'm a huge fan of. I was excited for it when it got announced. I wanted a book with Cyclops in it because he's, like you said, one of my favorite characters at the moment. And again, if it's just if you like Cyclops, Emma Frost, Magneto, and the idea of finding new mutants, this book's for you. It's pretty. They've gone some pretty crazy places so far, and it's just getting started. So it's a good one for you.
Okay, fair enough. So we'll move on to X-Men, and again, another issue that I read the number one for to get ready for today's show and to get ready for Jason's complete command of the X-Men universe. Why is this not called X-Women, Jason?
I don't know. That it is. I don't know that. I think X-Men as a term, if it's not a purely a term based on sex. It's not based on, and by sex I mean, of course, male or female. I don't mean the dirty good stuff. I think as an X-Man, it doesn't mean that you're a man or a woman. I think that's why this can still work. That's just a term that Xavier coined many, many years ago, and they're running with. But as you can surmise from Stephen's comment or question, this book doesn't have any male leading characters in it. Not a one so far. This book. There's a lot of
fans.
This is the
Joss Whedon book.
Yeah, if you're a fan of the X-Woman, this book's for you. I think we got in this cast, we've got Kitty Pryde, Rogue, Psylocke, Storm, Jubilee. Who am I forgetting? There's one other, I think. But
I'm
just
through. Yeah, I think that's...
And it's also, that's probably the core cast for now. I think it's going to expand as we get further in. But I think that's primarily who we're dealing with, and for the most part in this book. This book has just started, so we're not far in yet. So it's difficult to give a total opinion. I don't want to tell anybody that we're going to have the best opinion yet. I believe the first storyline just wrapped up, and it's only a 3-issue arc. It's still time to get in on the ground floor on this one if you're a fan of the X-Women. It's written by one of your favorite writers, maybe. Forgive me if I'm misquoting you, sir, but...
No, you're not.
Written by Brian Woods. Writing this one, and of course we have Olivier. How do you say this name? Olivier Coipel.
Yes,
I think that's right. Doing the art, which I love his art, by the way. He or her, I can't remember if it's a him or a her, but I love the art. But I'll let you talk about the premise and the story if you'd like, and then we can discuss it.
Well, I was going to try to characterize this the way that we've been characterizing the other books, and I wouldn't say this is Secret Avengers, but I do feel that this is very much a subset of what's happening in the greater universe. I feel like you can go down the rabbit hole of what's happening in this book and not feel like you have to be following along with the much larger issues in the X-Men universe. Is that a fair statement? And I'm saying that having read, like, 2 issues.
I would agree. I think that this book is fairly self-contained. It does have some continuity, minor continuity outside of the book. Like, you may be asking, why is Jubilee a vampire and not a mutant anymore and all that good stuff? There's a lot of questions that you may not know initially. But, yeah, I mean, I think the first storyline, very self-contained. It deals with a villain that was introduced in Grant Morrison's crazy, crazy run in X-Men back in the late 90s, early 2000s. I think it's difficult to classify, but it's also very self-contained as well. You're not going to have to buy a million other books to understand this one.
Nope, I think you're right.
So what do you like the cast? Do you think that it works well together?
Well, I mean, that many powerful women together, I mean, you're gonna see some fireworks. I do like it, and again, I was teasing a bit about it, because I also think X-People sounds dumb. Apart from, if you can't have X-Women, you know, X-People would just be the worst. It would be the worst. But yeah, I like this insofar as, you remember, and this is an ongoing conversation for those of you who, maybe this is your first Culture of Comics show that you listen to, that Jason and I have been engaging it since the beginning, before getting to this show, this episode today, is the role of women in comics, and is that progressing or not? And I suppose calling a book X-Men and having it be completely populated by women, apart from, of course, you know, not changing it, there's no point in calling it X-Women. But the point that the X-Men book is dominated by women, I think that that's a good statement in and of itself.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think, and I just want to reiterate with this book, as with any book, for those who complain about not enough female-oriented mainstream books, if you're not buying this, it's your own fault that we don't have that. We have to support that if you want that. And I think this is a good play. This is going to probably be more successful than many of the others that have launched, because most of us, even if you don't like some of the other female superheroes, most of us like the X-Men. You know, even most of us grew up watching the 90s cartoon and just big fans of Rogue and Jubilee and all of them. And this book brings that to the forefront. But what I like about it is that they don't make a big deal about it. They don't say, okay, we're the girl squad. They just get together and it's completely natural. It doesn't feel like it's trying to be more than it is. I'm not trying to make a giant statement about anything here. So it feels natural. So it's not going to bother as many people about that. Some people, there's some out there who might be like, oh, the all-girl squad, women's rights, superiority, et cetera, whatever. If that's your problem, first of all, you've got a big problem. I'll leave you at that. But second of all, it really is a force that down your throat. It's good characters who just happen to be female in a very good book so far. So far, the first issue, I mean, I think the first arc, I should say, the first three issues deal with a villain who's one of the most difficult to describe villains I think I've ever seen in a comic book, named John Sublime, and his sister, Archaea, or something along those lines, who we just met in this book. John Sublime was introduced back in the Grant Morrison run as a villain who is a disease or a virus. That's all. He's a virus. He doesn't really even have a body. And he comes to the X-Men through Jubilee and in the form of a baby. He's possessed a baby, kind of. And that's not quite right. The baby actually is holding in John Sublime's sister, and John Sublime comes to the X-Men and says, hey, you got to stop my sister, who just happens to be a baby, by the way. So they're like, we're not going to kill a baby. But a couple of odd supervillains, a very Grant Morrison, I got to say, to make a villain that's just a virus. A virus has been around millions of years. But so far, that's the first arc, and so now we've got that out of the way. We know what Brian Woods is capable of as a writer. He's very, very strong as a writer. So I'd be interested to see what kind of stories he has planned.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, for those who don't know who Brian Wood is, he's the brains behind the current Star Wars run on Dark Horse, which is something that occurs right after Episode 4, and he's also the brains behind the Massive, which is
yep.
Something I continue to enjoy.
Yeah, and so do you see any of Brian Wood in the writing in this book? Does it feel like a Brian Wood book to you so far? Is there anything
I feel like
apart,
I was going to say, I feel like we've got to get a bit further into it. But I mean, if we're taking on the idea that Brian Wood is the person who's giving us Princess Leia X-wing fighter, X-wing pilot, then yeah. Sure, I'm excited about what happens next.
As am I, and it's got a great cast again. Just the best X-woman. That they've got, I think, except for Emma Frost and Jean Grey, but that's a whole different story. Those are my favorite X-Women. Jean Grey for a very different reason. I want Jean Grey to stay dead. I know that's going to make you very...
And we'll get into that in a minute.
I'm a big fan of the Ice Queen, Emma Frost herself. I would like to see her become a cast member at some point as well. But that can't happen until they get back together, which the Schism... but I think they'll get back together after this big storyline at the end, this Battle of the Atom. I think it's going to heal the divide. And so I think that'd be very cool to have her back in on the cast, because she brings a very cool snarkiness that they don't quite have right now. They all kind of get along as it is. These girls all get along. They've been together for a long time.
Right.
But it's a cool book. And I think with this one, I'm not saying we're saying it's a good book, but understand it's just started. It's not enough to give you any kind of perception of where it's going and what's going to be happening in the future. This book is brand new. It's got a good start so far. And if you like the concept of X-Women as opposed to X-Men, if you like the X-Women in the cast, you're going to like it. It's built for you, so please go buy it. If you want these kind of books, go buy them.
Yeah, stop complaining and start spending.
So very true. Well, good. What else? Anything else on the X-Men today?
No, we can move on to my currently favorite X-Men book and the only X-Men book that I pull regularly. Because we're counting Uncanny Avengers as an outlier. It's neither Avengers nor X-Men. So this would be the only X-Men book I pull regularly, which is all
why
new X-Men. I'm not saying that I'm not open to it. That's why I said in preparation for this show, I read Uncanny and X-Men, and I'm seeing how that goes for me. I'm not saying that I'm not interested. I've got to kind of ease into it. I'm not as well equipped as Jason is to, you know, read 70 titles a month.
So, I just can't imagine why this one's your favorite. That's what I mean. I can't imagine why.
Well, because you're not a Jean Grey fan. You're not a Jean Grey fan.
No.
So of course you. you can't imagine why. But all new X-Men. The premise of this book is something that we're going to see in another way played out in the new X-Men movie, Days of Future Past. And I'm trying to hold myself from talking about it. The scene that was worth the price of admission at the Wolverine movie. I was just so excited when I saw it. But the idea is that after Charles Xavier's death, and you have to keep in mind, Charles Xavier's death hangs over almost every book we've talked about today. There is no way in which his shadow does not touch these books. He's mentioned, he's talked about. In one, he's literally overshadowed. He's on a cover, I think, of one of the all-new X-Men. Or in Uncanny Avengers, we see him in the hallway and as they're moving pictures around. And he's just a huge character. And after his death, Beast, from our current timeline, goes back into the past to get the young X-Men. And this was something I had sort of the pleasure of running into Dennis Hopeless at the Kansas City Comic Con, because he wrote X-Men Season 1, which I thought was a very nice zero or point one book for all-new X-Men. If you read X-Men Season 1, you're going to get the setup for Marvel Girl, Jean Grey, and these young versions of the original X-Men. And it's a great setup for this book, All New X-Men. What I like about it, for someone like me, who is not as well acquainted as Jason is with the X-Men universe, because of how this book is written, they have to educate me. They have no luxury of assuming continuity for the reader. Someone who's picking up all new X-Men, the assumption is we are going to have to baby this person. We're going to have to give them everything. And this is most well illustrated when Jean Grey is basically told everything that has happened in the alternate timeline. Her future. She is, and it's a huge AR spread, and the AR goes through and it tells you all of these different iterations of Jean Grey through the years, and you're talking about, you know, dozens of years of X-Men lore, all summarized for me in a full two-page spread. And I'm not saying I got everything out of that, but this book allows me to get ramped up to read other X-Men books. And I think that's what I appreciate about it. I think I just love the Jean Grey character, not as portrayed by Famke Janssen, but her character herself. And especially at this time when she's just learning how powerful she really is. And watching everyone who knows in their universe Jean Grey is dead, and watching everybody react to her differently, that is really neat. The idea of someone who is known to be dead. What if you had a second chance to get to know them? There's a moment here where Scott Summers goes to his safe deposit box, and in it is the wedding invitation for his and Jean Grey's wedding. And as a result of them coming to the future, he and Jean are kind of on the outs, and he hands her that invitation. And it's just, you know, what happens when you mess with your future in the present? I think the time travel part of this book is maybe the most compelling and fascinating to me. Secondly, I would say that the Jean Grey element, this super powerful character in the Marvel Universe, I think something that the Scarlet Witch has kind of assumed in the absence of Jean Grey, the super powerful character, what do you do with her? And what's going to happen? There's no way that they're going to let this. They're not going to let this continue, are they? They're not going to let Jean Grey continue to exist. We got rid of her. She's gone, right? She's dead. And I think that mystery, I want to keep reading and see how they resolve this, because they've really messed things up. And this goes along with the trope of the Age of Ultron, that you can't just keep trotting back and forth between time and continuity and think that everything's going to be okay. This is a very morally questionable move for Beast. And everyone's like, well, you know, he wouldn't have done it unless it was so drastic. It's like, well, can you ever do it? And I think that is also implied within the book. So those three threads for me, and I could keep going on and on about the book in general, but I think those three things, time travel, Jean Grey, and how do you resolve this book, are what keep me reading page after page after page. And it's one of my top 10 Marvel books, and something I really, really enjoy every time it comes out.
This is my second favorite X-Men book, after Uncanny X-Men. And I think it does, once again, this book, and I'm sorry, this is the way that we formatted this show today, this one has a lot to do with the fallout of Avengers vs. X-Men, as does most of Marvel now, for that matter. That's the whole reason for Marvel now, arguably, is that it was time for a change. Things are different now than they used to be. And the premise here, and again, this speaks to a little bit of the hypocrisy on the Wolverine side. I know I keep doing this, that Beast decides he wants to go back and pick up Cyclops when he was young so he can show the current Cyclops what he used to be like. You know, he used to be idealistic and cool, man. Now you're crazy. So Beast makes a bad decision, stupid decision, and now they're back in the present. And now, quite honestly, now that they've seen what they were going to become, most of them don't want to go back. Most of them are now – that's the premise here. They after the first arc, the first three issues, right, three or four, they decide they're going to stay. And, of course, the Core 5 X-Men, for those who don't know, the very first X-Men we're talking about, of course, Cyclops and Jean Grey, Beast, Angel, and Iceman. And as a matter of fact, I think that this I'll be honest with you, Stephen, this is a great book, but as you said, I don't think it's sustainable on this storyline. And I think what's going to happen, and this is just me making predictions because it's my prediction time of the show.
And listen up here. When Jason Fraser makes a prediction, it's correct. So get out your pens and pencils, bring out your iPads, and write this down.
So the next month, as I said earlier, there's going to be the start of the 50-year anniversary X-Men event, Battle of the Atom. The premise of this story is that some future X-Men come to the present to send back the past X-Men because it's messing up the time stream, as it just had to do. And I think, Stephen, at the end of this series, the all-new X-Men as we know it now is no longer going to exist. I think they're going to be successful. They're going to send the old X-Men, the first X-Men, back into the past. Now, the book may go on and may have a different cast at that point, but I think we're coming to the end of our time with this group.
Will all the issues disappear out of my long box?
Will they just completely disappear? It just depends. It depends on what your theory of time travel is. Maybe it's an alternate reality now, and you're going to get to keep it. So who knows? Who knows? But I think that what's interesting about this book and why we're holding on is because, like you said, we know this can't last. The way things are now, it can't end that way. It can't keep going this way, or things are going to be irretrievably broken. How do you fix something like that? The people who know their future, you've ruined a lot of what's – in order for things to be as successful as they are now, for the people to even be alive now, Cyclops and Jean Grey had to be together. A lot of things had to happen. Beast had to do certain things. Angel had to – these things, are they going to go back and do those things now that they know they're going to do them? Probably not. I think that's such a tough question to ask. Would you do something – would you make the same choice if you knew that you made that choice in the future, if you knew what the repercussions were? If it hurts you at the moment, but it was better for everything overall. It's a tough question, and that's what makes it a good book and a tough issue to deal with. And there's lots of people on all sides saying, you guys have to go back. You can't be here. And the Avengers, for one, the Uncanny Avengers dropped by and lorded that over them, Scarlet Witched them. But it's fascinating, and it is, and I think it's a tough question because it looks as though the way they're leading things in now is the question is, would Jean Grey still become the Phoenix at that young of an age had she known she could be that powerful? And they're kind of leading into that a little bit. She's learning her powers before she was meant to, I guess is a good way to say that. And as a result, she's progressing faster than she meant to. She might have by herself managed to bring the Phoenix back after it was destroyed at the end of Avengers vs. X-Men. And that's not a good thing. It saved the mutants in this case, but you don't want the Phoenix back. It's done what it needed to do, leave it in the past, so to speak. That's the problem. It's now back in the present again. So we're leading into a very interesting story, and I think that story, next month's Battle of the Atom, if you're trying to get ready for that, you're really going to want to take a look at all new X-Men that lead into that. That's the book that's leading right into that. Everything else is kind of supplementary, I think. But it's a great book, and I actually like Jean Grey in this book. I don't want her to stay. I do want her time to be over, and that's not because I hate the character. I just think she's had her time, and she's just like Xavier. And again, I have to have one unpopular opinion to show. Her and Xavier have served their purpose as characters. They don't need to be here anymore. They've done what they needed to do. They have made huge marks on the X-Men, and they always will have that mark. But as a character, they've run their arc, I think. They've run their course, and they're better off dead to serve the story. Just my opinion.
No, I think your point's well taken. I think that's just the problem with some people is they can't leave dead enough alone. And I think that's the problem with some comics, and probably one of the better parts of the Ultimate Universe is that people can actually die and rest in peace. And
well,
until
this week.
we'll talk about that. But anything else you want to say about the Jean Grey book, also known as All New X-Men?
No, I think it's – I shouldn't say no. Yes! I want to say more about it. It's got some very cool villains throughout. Of course, we're dealing with – and it's got some weird hookups. It's got Mystique and Sabretooth and a new Brotherhood, which I love those characters. I think they're very cool. And if I had to pick one book, an episode that we talked about to say this about, this book is fun. This book is – it's just – it's excellent. It's very, very good. I honestly think it's very close to my favorite X-Men book because it does. You don't have to choose a side to read this book. It encompasses all sides of the split. Everybody's in it.
Fair enough. I want to do just a tiny bit of an ambush here, Jason. And if not, we can just put it into our next part two show. Did you manage to get through the What If AVX? Four-part miniseries?
I did. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so why don't we address that now? Because I think given how our show discussion has gone today, it's probably a really appropriate place to have that conversation.
I would agree. And what if issue we're not really going to have a place for it. It'll be kind of a catch-all in any of our shows anyway. It's not really anywhere. But it is important today. So the What If series, for those who don't know, What If is a Marvel, what do you want to call it, a line of Marvel books that basically says, what if this happened instead of this happened? So different choices are made in the story, and we get to see how they would have, another side of that story, and how it would have changed things. In the What If Avengers vs. X-Men, it changed a lot. I think if you did not like Avengers vs. X-Men, I liked the story quite a bit, by the way, obviously, but if you didn't like it, this book, I think, tells you how it could have gone worse. It could have been a worse story. I think it's a cool story, but I think I'm glad it wasn't a 12-ish. I'm glad this is not how the story actually went, because in this case, this is going to be difficult to explain in as short a time as possible. I know we're not really running short on time just yet, but I'll try to keep it as short as I can. In Avengers vs. X-Men, which sprung out of the Messiah trilogy, which brought forth the first mutant born in years after Scarlet Witch decided that she wanted to wipe out all the mutants. This was the first mutant born. This was a young red-headed baby who everybody was sure was a reincarnation of Jean Grey. Remember all that?
Yeah.
Sure, it's Jean Grey. It's not Jean Grey. It was a good fake-out. I like it. It turned out to be a young girl named Hope who was supposed to be able to bring the mutants back from extinction. We didn't know how that was going to happen, but as the storyline began with Hope and leading into Avengers vs. X-Men, it became clear that she was going to be the next recipient of the Phoenix Force, which is a force in the Marvel Universe of life, of death and rebirth. So ideally, the Phoenix would be able to bring the mutants back and start the powers up again. And unfortunately, also the Phoenix has been known to wipe out a few planets. You know, whatever. It's been genocide, no big deal. But it's been known to wipe out people and planets. So the Avengers are not sure that it's the best idea that the X-Men allow Hope to receive the Phoenix. So can't be sure that she's going to be able to save the Earth. She might just destroy it. So things don't go quite as planned in Avengers vs. X-Men, and it turns out they have a big fight on the moon. The X-Men, the uncanny X-Men at the time, and the Avengers over Hope. The Phoenix gets there, and Iron Man shoots the Phoenix and splits it into five. And so as a result, five X-Men now possess the Phoenix Force instead of one person who was supposed to possess it. So Cyclops, Emma Frost, Namor, Colossus, and Magic are all Phoenix. And so they go about setting the world right. The Avengers don't like people telling them what to do, but the X-Men are going around the world. They're stopping war. They're feeding the world. They're stopping world hunger. They're providing water for everybody. They're providing crops. They're doing good things. On the other hand, they are being very controlling about it. They go to the UN and say, hey, you guys fight. We're going to stop you. No more wars. No more battles. We've set the human race free from war. Now you guys can pursue improvement, which I thought was a great message, but again, the way they went about it, probably not right. So the Avengers and X-Men fight. Hope takes over and receives the Phoenix Force after Cyclops goes crazy, and she restores the mutant race. That's how Avengers vs. X-Men went. That's how it ended. And in the what-if version of that, it doesn't go quite so well because Magneto is up to his old tricks. Magneto, he talks Hope into... he starts the war with the Avengers. He kills quite a few of them in the first issue and the second issue, and then talks Hope into destroying the world. And so they don't quite get that far. Jean Grey comes back somewhat to kind of help out in the end. And her and Wolverine end up together in the White Hot Room, whatever the hell that thing is, which was stupid. I never liked Wolverine and Jean Grey together. Stupid, stupid, stupid. But terrible, terrible story. I liked reading it, but I will say that I'm glad that's not how the story went. It basically is everybody dies, the world is saved, Wolverine and Jean Grey get together.
I want my money back for all those four issues.
I think that can make us appreciate, if you weren't the hugest fan of Avengers vs. X-Men, you can now appreciate how good that was in comparison.
Oh, yeah, no, I will say, I mean, this is definitely a horrible alternate situation. And, yes, it makes Avengers and X-Men look that much better, but I just thought I didn't like the art. I didn't like the storyline. I think if you're going to do a what-if, make it a good what-if. I just felt this fell a bit short. You know, if you're going to do an alternate to such an epic storyline, you know, don't call it in. And I think that's what they did with this, is they just called it in and they got suckers like you and me to buy four issues.
Well, it'll probably happen again. They've got me by the short and curly, so to speak, this Marvel guys, doggone it. But with that being said, yeah, it was not. There have been much better what-ifs throughout in the last few years. This was not one of the best. And realistically, did no service to the story whatsoever. It wasn't even a satisfying alternate take, as you said. They wiped out 90% of the characters in the first two issues. So we were left with Magneto, Hope, and Wolverine. And so we're like, great, great, awesome. I actually like Hope Summers. I know a lot of people don't. I like her quite a bit. I know she's a big part of one of the other experts we're going to talk about, Cable and X-Force. I like her quite a bit. I think she's a suitable replacement for Jean Grey. And I know I can hear everybody screaming now, but I like her. She's got the Jean Grey look to her. She's got the Jean Grey attitude to her a bit. And I'd rather have her around than Jean Grey come back from the dead again.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, I think that wraps up our discussion of the Marvel books, strictly speaking, and the continuity of the current Marvel Now run.
The 616 books, yep. The main universe. We've got one.
We're moving on to the Ultimate Universe.
Which, by the way, is better than it's been in a long time. Oh, man, it's good.
And this is a completely new territory for me, Jason, so I'm going to let you take this away.
Well, sure. So Ultimate Comics X-Men obviously stems off of, we talked about a series called Ultimatum in last month, and how that changed the landscape of the Ultimate Universe. And in the Ultimate Universe, I want to remind everybody, they follow different rules. Things are a little more, I would say, realistic-y, somewhat realistic, and also when a character dies, that character is dead. So if we go into this book, Ultimate Comics X-Men, they're not going to have a lot of the cast that you think you're going to have. I should say our two main players, Cyclops and Wolverine, dead. Professor Xavier, Magneto, dead. Beast, dead. The only original X-Men really that we have left are, in this book, Kitty Pryde, Jean Grey, Colossus, and Storm. I believe that's it, right? I don't think there's anybody else left of the main original X-Men group anyway. Everybody else is dead. they're all gone. Now, I will say they did a very sneaky thing and they brought back Wolverine's son so they could have a Wolverine in this book. It's a blonde-haired, blue-eyed Wolverine, but it's a Wolverine. He even had the same damn hairstyle half the time. So you're not fooling me, guys. I get it. You said, we killed Wolverine. We should have done that. Let's bring back his son. That's cool. He'll have the same exact powers. He'll just be Wolverine number two. But this book, I believe, is still also being written by Brian Woods, right? Is he still writing this one?
Yes.
Yes. So he's taking this into a territory now that I think you probably appreciate a great deal, Stephen. Some of the themes in this book are things that you've talked about liking quite a bit in the past. So yes, the theme of being feared and hated and being minority is still very, very prevalent in this book. And as a result of being hated, and let me take a step back for a second and say, mutants in the Ultimate Universe are not born per se. They were made by the government. Now they can be born off of parents who were infected with this mutant virus. But it's ironic that they hate mutants so much, but we also made mutants. They're just us, and we did something to them. But that being said, mutants have been given, after the giant, what would you call it, Civil War in the United States, the United States is in a very different landscape in the Ultimate Universe. There was a lot of secession from the states. A lot of states are not part of the U.S. anymore. The Eastern Seaboard is flat out destroyed. In the midst of all that, the X-Men carved out a little pace for themselves and kind of saved the West Coast. And as a result, they were gifted, not with money, not with fame, not with thanks. They said, good job, mutants. Now here's some land. Live on it, on a reservation. Gee, thanks. So very much appreciated. But the mutants, in the case of that, and that, this is why I think you like it, it has a lot of almost conservation kind of undertones to it, right? They have built their own incredibly thriving society on this island. They've actually developed a seed, which they call the seed, which is actually sentient and actually will grow in any place in the world. So they were given some land in a desert, and they have developed their own seed through hard work that will grow anywhere. And so they now have this lush forest area and crops, and then now the government wants it back. What'd you do? We want that stuff. We were just kidding. This isn't really your land. We want it back. So there's a lot of undertones with that in the book. And currently, as a matter of fact, the leader of the X-Men is Kitty Pryde, or Shadow Cat. And what a strong character she's been in the last few books. I would think that she's never been written quite this well. And it's funny that it's in the Ultimate Universe, I think. Now, well, she is written very well in All New X-Men, I think. She's as the headmaster for the past X-Men, but She's a very strong political leader in the Ultimate Universe right now. And we're getting ready to get into a storyline where, and this is more complex, so I'll try to keep it fairly short, where Jean Grey is also the ruler of a mutant nation in Asia. And now, for some reason, she's also attacking the reservation because she thinks there should only be one mutant nation, which I don't get, but I'm sure they'll explain it. But the themes and the discussions and the topics in this book are very interesting to me, but they're very different. It can be action-packed, but it has to do a lot with betrayal, a lot of political games being played, a lot of conservation kind of undertones throughout, and a lot of talk about, obviously, the taboo topic of reservations and what we did to people in the past as a country. We're doing again in this book, and it's just awful. But they've made the best of it, and now we want it back. Do you read all of these? Is this one you consistently read as well, Stephen?
No, this is something I'm sort of auditioning via listening to you.
Okay, well, good. It's good. No, I think this book would very much speak to you, good sir. I think this is one you'd get a great deal of pleasure out of reading. again, deals with a lot of topics that you in the previous shows have discussed with books like The Massive that deal with topics like this. Now, maybe not on such a direct scale, but the undertones are there. And we're going into a very interesting place because we just settled an infighting between they called it Nation X or Reservation X. There were two groups of mutants. There was one trying to split off from Kitty Pryde and do their own thing, and now they've got back together. Now they have to get ready to fight this whole other mutant nation. Now they finally settled down the U.S. government and settled down their infighting. Now they have to fight another mutant nation for no reason other than that mutant nation says, we want to be the only ones. You guys are doing better than us. We want that. We want to be the mutant nation. So it's funny because most of the time you think in an X-Men book, it's them against the world. But in this case, it's them versus themselves currently. But I think you'd be very, very well off picking this book up, Stephen, and probably starting around issue 14, if you can go back that far. I know we're much further than that right now. We're getting it close to issue 30. But I think you'd be interested in the storyline from that point going in. It's been a very unique take on it. It does have a very Brian Woods feel to it. Again, he's got things he goes back to in topics in terms of his writing, and I think this is full of a lot of Brian Woods points. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's very, very cool. It's very cool. Now, I will say, I, at this point, I'm liking Ultimate Comics. Ultimates better, but that's because of a whole different reason. But we'll talk about that, I'm sure, in a little bit with our favorites of the week. Spoiler alert. but I think you and anybody else who likes Brian Woods as a writer would really appreciate where this has gone. And again, it's really begun to get interesting and lead into this big storyline since issue 14. I believe we're up to about, we might even be up to about 28 or 29 by now. So there's a lot of reading to catch up in, but I know that there's going to be a lot of those trades out. And the war between the mutant nations is just beginning. So it's a good place to jump in if you want. But I really suggest to get a really good feel for where everything's at, you go back to about issue 14 and start from there. It's really, really cool. Lots of good story. Very unique storyline for the X-Men. So I think you just can't go wrong reading any of that.
Okay. I'm interested. I'm going to see what I can do as far as getting back and getting some of the older issues so I can – I'm pretty up to date. I've been reading Ultimate Comics, Ultimate since 18.1. So that part of the universe I have some knowledge of. So don't know if I can get all the way back to that for Ultimate X-Men. What do you think about this in terms of the other X-Men books we've been talking about tonight, that if someone, and I know this is a false dilemma in some ways, but if you could only pick, we kind of did this question with Ultimate Comics, Ultimates, and Avengers, and I remember your answer from that, and I'm pretty sure I can guess your answer here, but you know, I have a limited budget, Jason. I can only pick Ultimate X-Men or one or two of the regular X-Men books. You know, what am I going to do?
Well, the good news about the Ultimate side of things is I think that if you had to pick one X-Men book to read, this would probably be the best way to go, just because there's only one X-Men book in the Ultimate Universe. You're not having to deal with crossovers or things happening in other issues and other storylines. You're not missing any of your characters. They're all in this book. So if you want a bang for your buck, just want to read one and done kind of X-Men book, this is the way to go. Now, it's not as fantastical. There's not a lot of supervillain battles kind of stuff, at least not recently. It's still very much a superhero book, but it's got some very mature and more real-world issues that they're dealing with. But, it's written very well. The art's very good. You're not going to go wrong if you had to pick one reading this. So if you had to tell me which one X-Men book would I read, if I could only read one, I would say this one, even though it's not mainstream continuity. And now if you wanted to go mainstream continuity, I would say you'd have to read all new X-Men. That's like I said, a mixture of the best of both worlds. But that one also involves X-Men who aren't always in that book. They're off in their other books throughout. And so they get the whole character. You get to read other issues of the other books sometimes. I do think all new X-Men is fairly well self-contained, but if you just want a one-and-done X-Men book, that I think Ultimates is a great place to go. You couldn't go wrong with that. But again, if you're looking for more of a mature telling of that as well, they do a great job with that.
Fair enough. We are on to our movie segment today, which, being a Marvel show, we almost always have a movie segment, I feel like. especially if it's summertime. And you had the privilege of seeing this about a week before I did. I just had a lot of things going on this month, so I only got to see it this weekend. And I knew with the show coming up, I had to see it. So I went to a showing a couple days ago and really, really enjoyed it. And but I want to hear your take first, Jason.
Yeah. So, of course, we're talking about The Wolverine. A sequel not only to the Wolverine Origins movie, but you'll be happy to know, or at least I was happy to know, a sequel to the X-Men movies. This movie's back in place. It takes place after the X-Men, The Last Stand, which we all just wish didn't happen in the first place. And I think eventually it's going to be so like it didn't happen in the first place, so that's a whole other show. A whole other movie, I should say. The Wolverine is a single hero movie, obviously, just the Wolverine character. This movie is kind of based on the original, I want to say, Chris Claremont-written Wolverine miniseries way back in the late 80s, early 90s. I want to say late 80s, in which he traveled to Japan and dealt with and worked through some stuff over there. This book deals a lot with that. Now, it does not follow that closely. It's not word-for-word kind of thing. So if you're a fan of that, don't think I'm trying to fool you into thinking you're going to get a completely accurate retelling. But for a movie, it works fantastic. This movie, of course, is about Wolverine having survived the horrible battle at the end of the last X-Men movie, The Last Stand, having essentially killed Jean Grey, and the X-Men are all disbanded, it would seem, off on his own, living in the wilderness, as Wolverine is wont to do, quite often, it seems like, and trying to deal with his pain and his frustration about not being having lived through seeing all of his friends die. That's where he starts it off. And it turns out that he, in the past, as we see, had saved a Japanese officer when he was being held in an internment camp in Japan during World War II. He actually is at the site of Nagasaki, I believe. Not Hiroshima, but Nagasaki, I think. Saves an officer from being incinerated by taking him to the bottom of a well. And this many, God knows how many years later, 80 years later, something like that, I guess it's still set in the present, so that'd be about right, a little longer than that. Maybe not quite 80, but still. This old Japanese gentleman, wants to repay Wolverine, at least it seems that way, by offering him a release from his immortality. He says, I can cure you of your healing. You'll age and you'll die like a normal man. And Wolverine, he doesn't actually take him up on the offer. I won't spoil too much of the movie, but he does have to deal with some points with the loss of his healing factor and what that means for him, and also what he can offer the world and what he can do. The movie, what I liked about it, it did not feature 500,000 mutants, and none of them had any lines. So I know that in The Last Stand and even some of the original X-Men ones, there were characters who we really loved who didn't get any lines or were written very poorly. But this movie focuses on, what do we got, like three mutants the whole movie? And they're all very well, they're all giving pretty good story arcs. It focuses on Wolverine as a character piece. I like that. It has a lot of action, but not a lot of crazy special effects, I would say. Nothing super crazy. A very cool train fight scene. A very good story. It's about a 2-hour movie, but it doesn't feel like it's that long. It feels like it ran pretty quick for me. And of course, it also has some guest appearances by Famke Janssen. That's how you say her name, Jean Grey, as a character in the movie. And that's explained as well, but I won't ruin it for anybody. But and also, of course, has one of the cooler end credits that I've seen in recent memory. I shouldn't say recent. I mean, all of the ones from the other Marvel movies are pretty fantastic, but this one is exciting for what it could mean for the next X-Men movie. But overall, I just thought it was a well-told story. It was not – Wolverine Origins just had too much going on, and for me it felt a little bit cheesy. Kind of – they just tried to do too much, and it really came across as – it was almost too comedic sometimes, or it was just too many jokes. Almost. I don't know if that makes sense. It was just too goofy. And they ruined a lot of characters in that movie that we all like. With that being said, this one is very respectful of the characters. It tells a great story, and it doesn't go overboard with that. It tells just the story. It's not a massive, overarching story. It's a fairly self-contained story, and I liked it quite a bit. Big fan of it.
I appreciate all your comments. I'm trying to think of how to contextualize mine within what you said. I would first start by saying that I did not like the Jean Grey / Jor-El story element. I think that it's babyish. I think it's something that panders to the wider cinematic universe. And maybe, you know, maybe as I'm saying that, I'm realizing I'm sounding a bit fanboyish, because the whole point of the cinematic universe is to introduce people who aren't going to read the comic universe to these characters. I would say our characters. I feel like, you know, I'm one of those people who only wants to listen to a band if I'm the only person who knows about them. So I should probably back down. Yeah, I need to back down a little bit on that comment. Let me put it another way. I don't like using Jor-El / Jean Grey as the story trope. I understand the connection, but I don't see it as necessary.
I would agree.
So I was unexpected, and I just talked about how Jean Grey, you know, was a favorite character. But as you said, you know, in the pre-show, you don't like Jean Grey and Wolverine together. Neither do I. I don't think that ever made any sense. And so the sort of deep connection there throughout the movie was a bit surprising. I really, really enjoyed the emotional part of this character. I think one of the things about a big ensemble movie like The Avengers is you can't really get into the individual motivations of each character. And coming back to a single hero movie allowed us to get back into, you know, what's going on for Wolverine. And I think for Hugh Jackman, someone who's probably, you know, read countless numbers of Wolverine books now to as prep for his character, and someone who's played Wolverine so many times, and it's almost like Robert Downey Jr. I mean, who else would play Wolverine at this point? I don't expect anyone else to play Iron Man. So I really enjoyed the emotional part of the story. I enjoyed the connection from the war and the sadness of Nagasaki to present day, and how peaceful and beautiful that place was in Japan, and how that relates to Logan, and how all things over time heal. Because the beginning of the story is the narrative of, well, you need to die because, you know, you just can't handle this anymore, outliving everybody and dealing with all of that. It's a very easy path, is it not? I think we could sympathize as non-fleshly immortals. You know, I believe that we're all immortal as we have souls, and I don't believe I'll ever die in that way, but I think that when you picture sort of more fleshly immortality as Logan has, I think that you feel for him when that path is proposed to him. You're like, yeah, you know what? I'm done with this thing. I'm ready to die. Fine, I'll pass on my immortality. But as the movie goes on, we realize that going through tough experiences is not an excuse to hide away in a cave. We see Logan, you know, reemerge. And I think at the end of the movie, there's a particular scene in which a part of his anatomy is changed a bit. I think the reemergence of that part of the anatomy shows that he is who he is deep down. And, you know, no matter what enhancements have been done to him. And I liked the pacing, I liked the characters, I liked the storyline, and I liked the production values. I thought it was a well-done movie, and I think part of it is there's a part of me that's quite suspicious for anything that's being done outside of the Marvel Studios stable. So with Marvel having control of so many of their properties now, I have a very wary eye cast on these studios who are simply hoarding these properties now because they got it when Marvel wasn't smart enough or didn't have enough cash to have their own studio. I continue to beat the drum for Disney owns Marvel. Disney has enough money to buy all these properties back, and they should do it. Because until they do, Marvel doesn't have creative, unitive control over some of their most valuable properties, and that's bad for a number of reasons.
I
liked it, I recommend it, and I think people should go see it. It's a worthy addition to the X-Men canon in the cinematic universe.
Yep, and I think I like that they brought Mariko in. Mariko is my favorite Wolverine girl, and she, I'll go ahead and spoil this for you so you don't get upset, she didn't die, but I really liked it, and I think that that character, and I always, my wife and I someday would love to go to Japan. I just think it's a beautiful place, an exciting place too. The city's exciting. The countryside's beautiful, and I just would love to go there someday. The movie covers all that kind of area. They go through cities, and think visually, Japan, for me, it was some of the best parts of Wolverine stories was when he was in Japan, and this movie does them very good service. Obviously, like I said, it deals with some great characters. It changes a few of the characters. They've got some different interpretations on Silver Samurai and Madame Viper, but I like the changes. They weren't bad. And they were kind of twisty. Those characters are kind of twisty when it's all said and done. I'm curious about that part of the anatomy that gets altered at the end of the movie, how that's going to play in the next movie. Because if we're just going to go back to how it was before, I'd like to know how that happened. But I digress. Where people are going, what are they talking about? We don't want to spoil that for you. That's
we,
all.
We don't. What
but
about it, the what about the after? I feel as though we can talk about that. What do you think?
I think we can spoil that part because it's first of all, many of you may have missed it. Of course, if you're a comic book fan, a comic book movie fan by now, you know not to leave with the credits anyway. But if you're not, if you don't typically stay for the credits, you missed a very cool scene. And we're going to describe it for you. And I'll let you have at it first, Steven, and we'll discuss what we think about that, because you really enjoyed it.
Wolverine's going through airport security because he ends the movie on a plane, and it's sort of a natural place for him to be. And he starts realizing that things are not quite right. His Wolverine animal senses is up, and behind him is Magneto. And Magneto is holding him in position because of all the metal in his body. So that's something that Magneto's always had on Wolverine, just sort of to hold him there. And he's telling them that something bad is going to happen. And then enter stage left, the character, everything kind of slows down, everybody freezes, and we are joined by a character. Jason, I'll let you take it from there.
Of course, so Wolverine, of course, asks, why should I trust you? And Magneto says, you shouldn't. And then everybody, as you said, everybody in the airport freezes up, which we know, as we've seen this person use these powers in the previous movies to do that. Everybody stops in their tracks. And running through the obstacle course of people on his little wheelchair, of course, is Professor Charles Xavier himself, Mr. Patrick Stewart, back in his role. Of course, he said, Wolverine's, how can this be? And Xavier says, you're not the only one with some tricks. And that's where it ends. But I do want to point out, before he's walking into that, before he walks up to the metal detector, there is a little bit of an Easter egg leading into the next movie, because on the television, there is a commercial for Trask Industries that's kind of showing a little bit of the Sentinel, which, for those who are not aware and not keeping up with this, is going to play a major part in the next movie. So bringing Wolverine back into the fold with the X-Men, Magneto and Xavier are back. That movie, by the way, when we get to that movie next year, I'm sure it's going to be just crazy discussion, because they once again have very ambitious plans for that. But I think that Fox, who owned the rights for X-Men along with Spider-Man, as you said, kind of weird. I wish Marvel would take him back, but they're making good movies with the X-Men right now, at least. First Class was good. This is good. Maybe they've learned their lesson. They learned a lot from the way the Marvel movies went. I think they're trying to tie all their movies together again. I think they're taking a lesson from the Avengers initiative, that was phase one of the Marvel movies, and they're trying to. And I think in this case it was very successful. It was very, very cool. A very cool scene overall. I liked it.
So, do you know the timeline on when we're going to get the next X-Men movie? I feel like it's within the next year.
It is supposed to be 2014, and I can tell you what, if you want to keep up with some pictures of that, Steven, and anybody else who isn't already, go ahead and follow the director. Follow the director on Twitter, Brian Singer. He posts up pictures all the time, so I have now seen what Wolverine looks like in past, present, and future. I've seen the Sentinels. I've seen some of the other mutants are throwing into the movie. If you're a Game of Thrones fan, which you probably are, who isn't, they're going to have Peter Dinklage, who plays Tyrion in that show, playing the Trask gentleman, I believe, is who he's playing, so the bad guy in the next movie. So it's going to be an excellent movie, and it comes out next year, so we're going to get into that eventually. I know it's going to be a while, but we'll get into it.
Okay. I think everything to be excited about. And it's a very, very long show today, Jason. We covered, as usual, a ton of stuff, but even more so than usual. For those of you who are just joining us, you are listening to The Culture of Comics on the AMDG Radio Network. We've covered an unbelievable amount of stuff today. Three Avengers books, Avengers, Secret Avengers, and Uncanny Avengers. We also covered Uncanny X-Men, X-Men, all new X-Men. We also talked about the What If Avengers vs. X-Men miniseries. We talked about Ultimate Comics, X-Men, and we just finished talking about the newest Marvel movie, The Wolverine. This month is going to have a slightly different format. Instead of our three, and we've promised upcoming four-show format, we're going to be doing two shows this month simply because of scheduling issues, more so mine than Jason. So next week, we will be doing our DC show, which will be entirely devoted to all things Green Lantern. So you ringslingers who've been waiting for that, don't worry, we're going to cover it all. Green Lantern, Green Lantern Corps, Green Lantern New Guardians, Red Lanterns, and Larfleeze, our favorite little orange guy. And our favorite little hoarder. He has his own hoarders, you know, network. And so that way, this month, we will just be doing a Marvel show and a DC show, and we'll get back into the independents next month. But as we said, this is part one of our Avengers and X-Men coverage, so it's going to take at least three shows to get through everything. So thanks for sticking with us through this group. Jason, anything you'd like to add before we head out today?
Do you think we've got time to talk about one of our picks of the week this week, or do you want to leave that out since we're running pretty long today?
Let's do one pick of the week, and let's limit it to Marvel just because we're right up against the clock for today.
Okay, let's do that. You want to go first, or shall I, sir?
I'll go first. It was a tie for me this week between Iron Man 13 and Thor number 10, and for the same reason. They're both highlighting just a tremendously great story arc. For Iron Man, it's the secret origin of Tony Stark. It's something great, and we've talked about this on a previous show. How do I talk about something that everyone has assumed but has never really been developed? So they've managed to find a part of Iron Man's history that hasn't really been talked about but is totally plausible, and I've just continued to enjoy the storyline so much. Thor number 10 is part four of the five-part God Bomb. Jason Aaron has just been running rampant with great storylines from the beginning of Thor, God of Thunder. And the reason that these are my picks of the week are because they're in the middle of great stories, and you can pick them up. You can pick them up right now, and you can get quite a bit out of the comic, and it'll make you want to go back and get those other ones. So in 1 minute, those are my two picks of the week for Marvel.
Good. So let me go through mine real fast. I've got one. Mine is Ultimate Comics Ultimates. I believe it's 23, the newest one from the last week. Of course, we're dealing with the Avengers Ultimates Disassembled. Currently, the bad guys, the Bruce Banner, the Hulk, Reed Richards, Quicksilver, and the mysterious She-Kang are destroying the Avengers. In the last issue, there was a very big death. I'm a big fan of this story so far because it's so big and crazy. I love using Reed Richards in a very unique way. He's a very good bad guy. You wouldn't think so, but he's a very good bad guy. They're showing some very gross and unique ways that he's using his powers. I mean, just body horror issues all the way, I got to say. Just disgusting things he's using his body to do now. And a very interesting twist ending. So I'll leave it at that since we don't want to go too long, but it's a fantastic book this week, and I'm really liking the Ultimates and where they're going. That's my pick of the week.
And sounds awesome. And join us next week for The Culture of Comics. We've been here on the AMDG Radio Network. You can find us at facebook.com/AMDG Radio. Also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/AMDG Radio. We're syndicated on iTunes. We're syndicated on Stitcher. Find us there. Listen to us. Write reviews for us. The more reviews that we have, the more people know about us, the more people know about us, the more people listen, the more people that listen, the more opportunities we have to give you great content. Jason, as always, it has been a pleasure. It's going to be great to have you walk us through Green Lantern next week.
Indeed it is, sir. As always, a good show. Thanks, everybody.
All right.